Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Watch your backs on Luke. I'm Captain Janeway of the USS Voyager.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation. It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica. That's a great looking shirt, man. I think that's one of my favorite shirts that you wear.
Oh, thanks, man.
You got some good shirt game.
Oh, I bought this shirt to wear to a wedding that was very casual.
Uh-huh.
But I still want it to look nice for a wedding, so.
Casual is not good enough for you. That's one thing I know for sure.
It's like an Aloha shirt. It's not like a, it's not dressy.
Yeah.
It's just got a collar, you know?
Is that a linen shirt?
I don't think it's linen. I think it's just maybe a poplin or something like that.
Wife has recently bought some linen sheets.
Yeah, I'm all about it. About it.
Here's the thing that I realized about linen. Not soft.
It gets softer as you use it.
Oh, really? Like I've got to grind my body oils into it for it to soften up?
It softens up with use, and then it's the best sleeping fabric there is.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I won't kick it out of bed then. Is that why my linen shirts are my least favorite shirts too? Because they just feel scratchy to me.
Oh, well, you know, everybody's got different texture stuff, so maybe it's just not your texture.
I'm just a soft boy is what I am. Soft boy who doesn't want to be scratched.
Yeah. I had a bunch of fast food fried chicken right before we recorded.
Oh, Lordy.
It's a bad choice.
Is this a fast food fried chicken place that has a catchy jingle?
It's a place where I love the chicken.
Oh, yeah. All right.
That's walkable from my house.
I love that chicken from there, too.
Yeah. Everybody rationalizes bad choices that they make around this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And the way I rationalize this is like, well, it's like about a mile from my house, so I'm going to walk there and walk back.
Sure.
I'm going to burn some calories, baby.
Not a cool day today either. It is almost 80 on my side of the city, so it's got to be close to 90 for you.
It's an even 90 over here, yeah. Not a pleasant walk, but...
Lunch gets overlooked, I think, by the food pyramid industrial complex or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, everyone's all about breakfast being the most important, but I feel like if I blow lunch, that's what blows my day.
Yeah, I've done it. I've done it to myself.
Yeah.
Should I start drinking? Is that the way out?
God, is it? You know what's funny about that is we have a very important job you and I got hired to do later today.
Yeah.
And we probably shouldn't show up drunk.
We have professional obligations today, unlike most days. Mm-hmm. But I'm also just really excited because I think this is the last episode before our streaming Spocktacular.
Is it?
The Double Dumbass Tour.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's this week.
I think
week.
This comes out the Monday that show drops on a Thursday.
Here's the thing. When you're filming me and you, you're going to need a lot of time for post.
Post-production is going to be pretty intensive, cleaning up those faces.
Yeah. We're going to need to stack the filters on all these cameras big time.
I think when we first announced it, it may have sound, because I don't think that we've been thinking so much about this live show. I don't think we thought about how it's presented and how it's distinct from a lot of these online like shows people have done. Like, we're not doing a stand-up show where we're sitting in an office yelling into a Zoom camera.
Yeah.
It's like a real show. It's like a comedy special.
It's a real film, Jack.
Can't wait to tell awful jokes in front of your parents and parents-in-law, knowing that my parents will be far, far away.
Yeah. I have been meaning to bring up to you that I want to get a brass plaque made for our friend and agent to put at one of the tables, though.
So
he has a nice place to sit.
Yeah. I mean, people are going to think that he died. Because if you see a brass plaque somewhere like that, it's normally coming with a birth date and a death date.
Yeah. But this is just going to have a birth date.
You know what? That's what we should do. It should be his name and then in parentheses, not dead. Just reserved.
Yeah. Rumors of his death have been exaggerated.
Yeah.
Rumors of the niceness of this species that the Voyager is visiting have also been exaggerated, Adam.
You just never know until you get there on shore leave, right?
Mm-hmm. Turns out this shore leave also has a justice problem.
Let's get into it, Ben. It's Star Trek Voyager Season 4, Episode 10. Random thoughts.
Reverse course.
Unless you've got something a little bigger in your torpedo tubes, I'm not turning around.
The Voyager is in orbit of the Mari homeworld, and when she starts talking about friendly aliens, I'm just clapping my hands together and rubbing them, ready to see some nuck.
What about plain old basic sex? You must have some need for that.
We've been really stacking them and racking them on The Greatest Generation in terms of like pace of watch and recording. We're trying to build up some banked shows ahead of your upcoming fatherhood responsibilities and the family leave you'll be taking that I'm very glad we'll be able to grant here at Uxbridge Shimoda.
Yeah, Adam's our HR department, and he like really worried over the paperwork to see if our company would be willing to grant me this.
Let me tell you something. When I'm your HR department, your company is in big trouble. Anyway, my point is, did you feel a little bit of post-traumatic stress getting out of Year of Hell and coming into shore leave? Like, I wasn't quite ready to let go of the vigilance of always being attacked all the time.
Yeah, but nobody on the ship remembers Year of
Hell.
Exactly. So they didn't have a Year of Hell.
I just need to get over it.
Yeah. That was what I didn't like about the end of Year of Hell. I was like, that was all for nothing?
Yeah.
They didn't learn anything from that?
Yeah, it was all a dream, really. Kind of doesn't hit the way you might like it to.
Yeah.
Like Patrick Duffy gets out of a shower.
Bobby!
Good morning.
And then the camera doesn't even pan down. It's just sad.
He was just having a shower jack to Year of Hell Part 1 and 2. It's the only way he can get over the top.
This episode opens with Tom and Neelix in the transporter room. Hanging out. Tom waiting for B'Elanna to come back from the surface. Neelix heading down to the surface.
Yeah.
He's planning on getting his dick wet with somebody named Tally. And he has really drenched himself in musk.
A lot of two-way tension here, I feel like, because Paris is back with what looks to be a bundle of tax documents or tax document paraphernalia. Yeah. And Neelix is like, cool, where'd you get those? Because I'm on my way to do the same. Paris is like, ah, what? What is that smell?
Are you wearing cologne?
I've been swimming in raw sewage.
Very enticing scent, don't you think?
Neelix, you got to spray the musk into the air and just walk through the cloud.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, he's wearing Talaxian Panther, the cologne that 10% of the time works 20% of the time. It is not a good smell in there. And the transporter room is a small room.
Yeah. The chief is just passed out behind the controls in the back.
Yeah. I'm sure you get all sorts of smells in the transporter room. That's probably a uniquely smelly place for all the comings and goings of people.
Yeah. Neelix is doing something that horny people have been doing for time immemorium. Finding a pretext to see the person that he wants to see.
It's true.
This is a produce purchasing trip, but eventually he's going to throw all those fresh fruits and vegetables in the garbage can if the night goes the way he's hoping it's going to go.
That's right. I mean, maybe keep a couple of them for the nightstand. You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
What are the chances that, like, half of all alien produce is sentient in some way that you don't expect? Don't stick me in!
He's got kind of a cucumbery-shaped thing, and he's going at her crotch, and she's like, no, no, down here. And she points at her knees.
Come on, Neelix, you gotta be a giving lover, you gotta lick some knee.
The captain and BLT are buying some technology equipment from this guy, Gwil, who stole Chakotay's Caesar cut and won't give it back.
It's kind of a wet Caesar, isn't it?
It's an overdressed Caesar.
Really is. That's the surest way to ruin a salad.
The dressing is really thick and a little bit heavy, so it kind of weighs those leaves down a little bit.
Captain is having a fun time, like, practicing her haggling skills. This is not something that you're used to when you grow up in a moneyless society.
And it's, like, on hard mode because she's haggling with a telepath.
Yeah, extra hard to do.
They both kind of laugh about it, like, oh, this is impossible, isn't it? Sure yeah. is.
Telepaths.
You're ripping me off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where did they get the money?
It's a good question.
They must have traded something for local currency. Like, she must have had, like, antique glasses that she sold somewhere.
That's always, like, you're excited to go to a new place, but, like, when the first stop is the bank or the money exchanger in the airport, like, it's not a fun tone setter, is it?
Speaking of non-fun tone setters, a guy barges into BLT.
Hey!
I'm sorry.
She's not even standing out in the middle of a thoroughfare.
This is why she takes such great umbrage. Her what the fuck is totally credible.
Why are you walking there, man?
Yeah.
So he apologizes. They part ways, and Gwil is, like, very, very concerned about BLT. And I thought for sure that the way this episode was going to go was Gwil was going to be putting the moves on, and then
yep.
Tom Paris was going to get super angry because he does that thing where he puts his hands on her shoulders.
Yeah.
Don't put your hands on somebody's shoulders when you don't know them.
And, like, it's overdoing it. Like, if you're an emotional first responder to a situation like this, like, you're ratcheting up the bad vibes.
Yeah.
By overdoing it this way.
You're making it seem more serious than it actually was.
Exactly. It's just some idiot not watching where they're going.
So Neelix is over talking to Tally, and he cannot keep his thoughts in his pants.
The melon lady and Neelix.
This is some of the loveliest fruit I've seen in a long time.
Have a conversation that's spoken entirely in entendre.
I don't think you'll find them very sweet.
Uh-huh.
And Tally tries to let Neelix down easy that her fruit just isn't going to be as tasty as she was hoping it would be.
Oh, how wonderfully tart.
And she hopes that's going to be all right for him. And Neelix is like, that's fine. I like unusual tastes.
I wasn't expecting you to come by the stand today, and I haven't taken a shower since last night.
Yeah, you don't even have to wash the fruit, really. What she can tell by getting up into his head is that Neelix is hungry for a tug job.
That is what you're thinking, isn't it? That you'd like me to tug on your whiskers?
And she is a willing participant in that. She suggests when she knocks off work that they can pursue that line of inquiry.
This, starting now, is an episode that forces you to accept that the crew of the Voyager are just going to eat shit for being here on this planet. Because I don't understand why it's okay to just allow the Mari into your heads. Because, it's just their way. They're just very invasive.
Yeah, could they not make like a special helmet that they could all wear down to the surface to reduce unwanted advances?
They're totally just being telepathically cucked because it's all Mari traditions and none of the Federation's requests here. Like, they could ask, hey, while we're down here on shore leave, we're not really comfortable with the whole mind probing. We just want to buy your melons and flirt a little bit. Is that okay?
Yeah. Speaking of melons, Adam, Tuvok is walking with a familiar lady who is not rocking a boob window in this particular costume.
It's why I didn't recognize her except by voice.
Human females are so repulsive.
In this episode, she's called Namira, but we, of course, all know her as Betor.
That's right. Yeah.
And she's a member of the local constabulary, and she's explaining the wonderful achievement of the Mari people of having eradicated crime and violence from their society.
If you call yourself a constable or a constabulator or whatever Namira calls herself, ACAB still works.
Mm-hmm. All consoles. Yeah.
Don't have to change it.
Yeah.
Tuvok is more than happy to do a little career day walk and talk with Namira. Namira is extremely proud of her culture and how little crime there is there, all thanks to her and her team.
Mm-hmm.
And would really like to know how Tuvok runs his piece of shit security operation, just like for shits and giggles, right?
One thing that really struck me about the way Namira relates to Tuvok in this episode is that she has such great admiration for his achievements as a person that suppresses violence. I was like, Namira, like, who told you he was so fucking great?
That had to come from somewhere else, or it came from Tuvok in a scene that we didn't see.
Yeah, and she's just like the most trusting constable in the galaxy.
Yeah. When they make plans to go up to the ship, we hear a crash, and actually like a series of crashes. Yeah. And when we see what's going on, it's the dude who ran into BLT just beating the shit out of a guy in his clay pot.
Yeah.
And this guy had it coming, because two places you don't bring your fragile earthware are the car chase portion of a Michael Bay movie and a Star Trek bazaar.
Right.
Those things are going down.
Mm-hmm. You know, like in the 90s when everybody was worried that kids would take what they learned in video games and apply them to their real lives.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's been playing a ton of Legend of Zelda.
Yeah.
The way he treats these clay pots.
No. Do you ever just look at a thing and want to smash it? Like a clay pot?
Yeah, yeah. I remember when Grand Theft Auto 4 came out and it was set in New York and I lived in New York and I played it a bunch. I would like walk outside and I'd be like, I could just get on any one of these motorcycles and just ride it away.
Yeah. And I want to be clear, like not out of any sense of violence or whatever, but just like to satisfyingly break a thing.
Right. So it doesn't seem like the local Mari people really know how to react to somebody acting a fool quite like this.
Yeah.
So it falls to Captain Janeway and Neelix to wrestle this guy to the ground and take his weapon away from him and talk some sense into him. And he's like, I don't know what happened, man. What's going on?
I just saw these pots and wanted to smash. Also saw the shopkeeper, wanted to smash him too.
Violence is not as over in the Mari civilization as is generally known.
Why were you beating that man?
I don't know.
After the title sequence, Tuvok is giving that tour that he promised to Namira, and she is really perplexed at the idea of a brig. This is a concept that she's never encountered before.
This is really classic passive aggression here. She's doing that thing where she's asking a bunch of questions about a thing she doesn't agree with.
Yeah.
So, why jail? Really?
So you punish people for being bad? And does that help them be better? Have you found that it works?
So it's interesting that your crime statistics are so low, and yet the resources allocated to fight it are so great. I mean, if we were to consider the spaces in a ship a budget, kind of a lot of that budget is going towards the brig and the ways that you run it. Kind of feels like you're self-justifying your job here. Does anyone feel safe, Tuvok, when you're around?
Speaking of crime statistics, he tosses out that the brig has been occupied for less than 1% of the Voyager's mission in the Delta Quadrant so far.
Yeah.
She's like, would you say that that's slightly less than 1% too much?
When you're in a shuttlecraft behind another shuttlecraft, do you find that people just don't know how to act around you?
They fly 5 miles under the shuttlecraft speed limit.
Do you find that you negatively affect the flow of traffic just with your very presence? Namira kind of grows into a great Umbridge with the idea of the brig before Kim radios in to interrupt, saying that some clay pots are down. Repeat, clay pots are down.
There's been some sort of attack in the marketplace.
And we cut back to the surface, and oh, what a drag for Neelix.
Yeah.
Oh, this girl that he was so close with. Now she's traumatized by seeing this violence. There's not going to be sex after that.
Yeah, I mean, very difficult to justify a tug job with someone who is shell-shocked.
Like, anybody staring into the middle distance cannot be ethically asked to perform a tug job, right? If you were getting a tug job and you looked up and saw the person staring into the middle distance, you have to put a stop to the proceedings right then and there.
I don't think consent is possible under these circumstances, Neelix. You just need to let go of the idea of a tug job right here and now.
Yeah. He's trying to comfort her, but this is just not something that people on this planet are used to. And over with the captain and BLT and Tuvok, Namira is talking about taking them into custody to ask them some questions. And Tuvok is like, what are you getting at here? Like, they were just bystanders. Like, they stopped the attack.
Yeah.
Why are you subjecting them to interrogation?
It seems unusual in this moment, but Namira kind of waves it off as, like, we want to hear about what everyone saw.
The ID, anybody?
TV guy was in the bushes. He heard it mostly.
Well, we'll take him in, too. We've got to question everybody. she's walking around the shattered remains
she's
of the pots.
She's just pointing at things.
And she goes, their MO was that they're good. When they broke the one pot, they didn't hesitate. They took out the rest of the pots because at that point, what's the difference?
Check the crowbar, run it through the computer. You'll probably get a phone book back. Run it anyway.
So we get this Rashomon-style interrogation scene where it's cutting between Janeway, BLT, and Neelix, and they're in this chair that's kind of like a clip show device that records your telepathic signals while you're being questioned.
This scene blew me away because when Namira introduces the idea of what's going to happen, like she says what's going to happen, then she does it, and then she says it's going to happen after. Janeway does that thing where you say the same thing right after the person speaking has said it, also known as the Adam. But I thought in this scene it was because she was freaked out and she was like hitting the brakes on the moment. She's like, I'm going to stick you in that chair, and then I'm going to get in those brains and I'm going to see what you saw. And she's like, you're going to stick me in that chair and get into these brains? And so forth. And I was like, well, great. She's never going to cop to this. She's totally game.
I guess it'd be pretty tough to keep a secret from you. Hmm?
Why is everyone okay with this?
I don't know. Because it's their way. That's like the whole case that they keep making is like, we can't pick and choose which local laws we observe.
I swear, Ben, the Voyager is eventually going to do shore leave on a planet where everyone seems really nice. And then everyone just gets fucking murdered because they're told that they're going to sit down for a nice interview in a room that locks from the outside with some weird chair in it.
Yeah, sorry. That's just the law here. Yeah. That's how the law works here.
I don't like it.
We didn't pass it. Our leaders passed it.
Whatever the Star Trek equivalent of street smart is, I don't feel like is happening in this episode.
Yeah. We tried to have common sense laws on this planet, but our Mari Supreme Court just is run by absolute assholes.
Not only that, like, are we supposed to forget the last time the crew had a run-in with telepaths? BLT uncovered a genocide.
Yeah.
Maybe we should just chill out on the telepaths.
Until we can figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Neelix not super forthcoming with his tug job thoughts when he's asked about those.
What else would I be thinking about?
And equally not forthcoming is BLT when she's asked if she had any violent thoughts toward the man that barged into her in the market.
How am I supposed to remember?
Yes or no, did you think about hurting him?
I mean, you do have Loaf of Klingon.
You have a retaliatory type of loaf. So yeah. we're just especially interested if that thought crossed your mind.
Yeah.
And when she finally admits that it may have slipped into her brain that she could swang on this dude, she is immediately arrested.
Yeah. Violent thought is the case that they gave her.
Hostile thought is against the law.
I mean, part of what sells the great umbrage that everyone takes is how smug Namira is about this.
Yeah.
She's like, case closed, everyone. I figured it out. We're just going to take BLT to be lightly lobotomized. And our problem will be solved. It's not going to be like throwing her in a brig, like you bunch of savages up on your ship.
Fucking barbarians. Anyways, yeah, our system is cool as hell. We will return a slightly mentally mutilated chief engineer to your ship just as soon as we can reconfigure our equipment.
I was squirming in this moment because I'm like, why is this happening? Why is Janeway letting this happen? Why is she approaching this like it's some fun legal project for her to do? She's like, it's okay, BLT. I'm going to scour the data and maybe we can have some sort of legal remedy to this.
Yeah. Lawyer Janeway is given one day to review the evidence, and it does not seem like anybody is worried that she might not succeed.
This was exactly the moment, and I'm sure you felt the same way, where I was like, what would need to happen for this to rise to the level of a rescue mission? Because I was thinking about it right fucking now.
Coffee black. Make it yourself.
I'm trying to help you see this as an opportunity to grow.
Make it yourself.
And the episode starts thinking about it right now as well, because Paris is quite exercised about what's going down on the surface and is yelling at the captain about it and is then trying to talk Chakotay into a rescue plan. He even gets to sit in the big chair to kick this rescue plan to Chakotay.
This must happen all the time, the if mom says no, ask dad quality of this moment.
Yeah.
Hey, remember when you punched me in the face? You remember how you said you owed me one?
Yeah.
This is that.
We got to break her out. And so Paris is given the busy work of come up with the tactical plan for a rescue operation so that if and when the captain fails, we'll have a plan B.
Were you bumped at all by Paris sitting in the big chair?
I think it was there for Chakotay to make a point. Like Chakotay was like setting up a rhetorical flourish like three steps ahead.
That's why Paris gives him the look on the way out. Like, nicely done.
Yeah.
Good day to you, sir.
It's like a friendly nut kick. Like, the captain's still the boss, Paris, and they're kind of grinning at each other.
Are there places in your house that you know are yours that, like, that only you sit or that you prefer to sit?
No, not really.
Or the ways that you sit in them are specific?
I don't really have that. There's not like a dad's Barca lounger vibe in my house, so.
You would have laughed because I was watching this episode upstairs on the big TV with the L-shaped couch.
Right.
And my wife always gets the elbow of the L-shaped couch, and I sit on the bottom part of the L.
Uh-huh.
And then my legs go over the lava to the other arm of the L.
I'm familiar with this seating arrangement.
Linguistics professionals will probably know what the parts of the L are. I don't.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when I saw Paris sit in the captain's chair and I was thinking about how strange that was, I was like, my wife is not here. And yet I'm sitting in this couch as if she were, like in a less comfortable way.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
that's my spot and I don't sit in her spot.
Did that inspire you to move over? Did
no.
you sit in the captain's chair?
No. I sat in my spot the way I sit, even though she wasn't there. That's weird as hell, huh?
That's very strange.
I also sleep on my side of the bed when we travel, like even though I'm sleeping alone. I'm in the driver's seat of the bed.
I think that my wife and I often swap sides when we travel.
How could you do that?
We sleep in opposite sides from normal when we're in a strange bed.
All bets are off in a lot of ways in the Airbnb.
So after this Plan B conversation, the captain and Tuvok are in the ready room or something. I guess it's the ready room, right? And she and he are talking about, you know, like what kind of person is Namira. And then the captain finds a little flaw in Numiri's theory of the case.
Don't you find that just the least bit curious?
There's something about Janeway's attitude here that seems to relish throwing this in Tuvok's face. Like, Tuvok has been full of praise in this scene toward Namira and the Mari culture.
Yeah.
And the expression on Janeway's face is like, not that great, huh? We don't know what she's found here.
Yeah.
Until the next scene where they have confronted Namira with this new evidence.
Turns out Frayn, the bumper slash pot smasher, was a habitual bad thought haver.
What's this guy walking the streets for?
Well, they've mutilated him plenty. They've really reworked his whole brain.
I don't know, man. I think you have three violent thoughts. I think you got to think about keeping the population safe from someone like that, Ben.
Wow. I'm glad you weren't a voter in the 80s.
Namira's reaction to this is that, look, guys, I know you're really riding for the idea that three violent strikes and you're out, and like this guy shouldn't be on the streets. But let me tell you something. Mr. Frayn is a success story here. We wipe this guy's memory all the time. We wipe it so often that we actually give this procedure a nickname. It's called the Kern.
His name was much more complicated before the procedure, but Frayn is the only thing he can hold in his mind.
I also love to smash clay pots in any farmer's market that I go to.
One reason I am no longer a border security agent was that any time I found clay pots in someone's luggage, I would smash it. Whether or not it was under the legal limit for personal importation.
Namira takes great umbrage with Tuvok's incredulity about Mr. Frayn. How dare he question their very successful methods?
Yeah.
And she makes the case for, like, look, we put the dopey thoughts on the table.
Dope on the table.
We are, like, arresting people and lobotomizing them and, like, getting police work done. You can't argue with that, right?
We put a lot of fucking dope on the table. A lot of it.
Right. You should see our newspaper. It's just police with their arms around the mayor and dopey thoughts on the table.
The coup de grace of the whole thing is, like, the classic last resort of the morally repugnant, which is like, look, guys, you think I want to be doing this?
Yeah.
You think I want to lobotomize all these people? No, of course not, but I have to because it's my job.
Yeah.
Tuvok, you know what it's like, right? Come on, man. You get me.
And he's like, yeah, no, like, I totally get you, but I also have a job to do, and I'm going to do it.
It's kind of an easy letdown, right? Like, there does not appear to be a romantic interest between them, but it feels like that kind of letdown, right? Like,
right.
Yeah, but also, this is a workplace argument,
totally.
And we aren't going to see things the same way. Your form of justice isn't how I would define it personally.
I appreciate your lack of boob window not distracting me from the difficult task ahead.
I mean, she is going to do what she is going to do, and she's not going to be convinced otherwise. And this is like the darkness of her character, and the shitty part that runs through the whole episode is that, like, she claims justice, but justice is not having a preconception of the outcome. And that's not how any credible justice system should work.
Bad for science, bad for justice.
Yeah.
But there is one bootlicker on the Voyager crew, and that's Seven of Nine.
Yeah.
Who is pro the Mari justice system.
Did you think they were shopping down there?
It seemed like they were kind of like packing up stuff that they already bought.
Okay. Maybe.
Like they're like putting it into that hexagonal suitcase that people in Starfleet always carry around.
I wish that was a little more clear.
Yeah, it was just some like weird light business that the director gave them to do while they're having this conversation. But Seven's thing is like, your whole thing is like seek out new life and new civilizations, but it's fucking stupid.
Yeah.
And if you're like so careless with your violent thoughts that you're getting in trouble for them, maybe BLT gets what she deserves.
I mean, Seven's kind of saying what I was saying earlier in the show, is like, you go in all doe-eyed on these shore leave excursions, expecting everyone who's nice to you to be actually nice, really.
Right.
And how often can it really be like that?
Sometimes you meet people that are rocking an amazing amount of nuck, and then they want to inject you with some kind of lethal serum.
Yeah.
Just because you crashed into some flowers.
Neelix has the ultimate retort for really any argument Seven has toward humanity.
My very name is racist.
Or any species that isn't Borgs, which is, yeah, I guess Seven, but at least we don't assimilate. Like, cool argument or whatever, but at least we don't do that.
Well, I've got to get that platinum, get that robe enlargement.
Put your best foot forward and present your new business project or political thing as well as you possibly can on the internet. How do you do that? Not through some cookie cutter form on a social media website or trying and failing to code a pretty website yourself. No, you go to Squarespace, start using their completely new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint, which helps you choose from professionally curated layouts and styling options that help you build a unique online presence from the ground up that is tailored to your brand or business. Squarespace has been a super loyal sponsor of The Greatest Generation. We hope you will give them a try. Go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/scarves to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Personal grooming is less about something I do for myself, even though there are myriad reasons for that, and more about my consideration for other people who have to look at me, be around me, and on special occasions, love me physically. And when it's clear my front and backyards are becoming overgrown and unsightly, I'll break out the mower, the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra from Manscaped. This Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra is really something else. This trimmer features two interchangeable next-gen skin-safe blade heads, a standard one for taking a little off the top, a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Listen, spring cleaning doesn't just apply to your nether regions. Get the full grooming experience with Manscaped's signature Beard Hedger Pro Kit and Handyman Electric Face Shaver. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants, right?
It's Webby season. Hi, I'm Sequoia Holmes, host of the Black People Love Paramore podcast, and we are nominated for a Webby for the episode where I interviewed Hayley Williams. In case you're unfamiliar, Black People Love Paramore is a podcast delving into the common and uncommon interests of Black people in order to help us feel more seen. We would love your vote to help us win this Webby. Please take a second and go over to the Black People Love Paramore podcast social media accounts, and you can find them at BPLP Pod across all social media platforms. Hit the link in bio and vote for Black People Love Paramore.
Hi, I'm Travis McElroy.
And I'm Teresa McElroy.
And we're the host of Schmanners.
We don't believe that etiquette should be used to judge other people.
No, on Schmanners, we see etiquette as a way to navigate social situations with confidence.
So if that sounds like something you're into,
join us every Friday on Maximum Fun, wherever you get your podcasts.
I've got to get that platinum.
What now?
Are you planning a heist?
Gold.
Over on the other side of the market, the melon lady is pulling some product down for an old that has walked into her shop area.
Yeah, this old is envious of her great melons, huh?
Yeah.
Your usual selection?
Yes, please.
And mad that she drops them, because the moment she does, she catches a knife to the throat.
Yeah.
This old lady is a fucking murderer.
That old lady's melons dropped long ago.
Mm.
And she is very upset by watching these hit the floor.
Now Neelix is never gonna get laid. Oh no!
RSVP tug job.
And we see the like flashback of the guy bumping into BLT like mid murder too.
Yeah, teaching the viewer what's going on.
It does seem that way.
Yeah.
So later, Neelix is walking with Tuvok extremely slowly in the hallway. Guy was like, "Speed up! Like either stop or walk a normal pace. This weird, extremely slow pace is so weird."
I feel like they're doing a setup on the other end of the corridor, and this is like all the corridor runway they had for this scene.
Yeah, so scene's a little longer than we thought. So if you guys could just try and walk at a pace where we can capture all of the dialogue here.
The other thing I noticed about this scene is how congested Tim Russ sounds.
Did the old woman say anything?
Yeah, he does sound a little congested in this.
It's got to be so tough when you're an actor and you have a very recognizable voice and a cadence to your speech. Like, any little difference in it has got to be so frustrating as an actor, like, when the expectation is that all the time.
Right.
It's not like having a zit or something. Right. Like, you can't use makeup on a voice.
You really can't. I mean, you can loop it, but that's gonna be even weirder.
Yeah.
Neelix suggests to Tuvok that maybe there's a connection. Like, this market seems to have, like, lingering violent thoughts that are causing attacks to happen left and right. I was like, maybe just close the market. Let's see if the market is the problem. And like,
let's just close the market until we can figure this thing out.
Make it like a super fun thought site, you know, super thought site.
I mean, to what extent are the melons involved? Like, are people touching a thing that's giving them violent thoughts?
They're just getting carried away because they get so excited by the melons.
Yeah. Neelix is like, "Look, man, you get to nail whoever did this. Do it for me and the tug job that never was."
Look at these sideburns. Look at them. Totally untugged.
Yeah.
Can you believe that?
Yeah. Look at this pent up frustration in these sideburns.
Do you think I'm going to be a good cook if I don't get a tug job soon? You know how long it's been since Kes broke up with me? I haven't had a tug job in a long time, Tuvok. You got to get to the bottom of this.
You know, we're a long way from Talax, which means we're never going to get me a Burns light to take care of my urges.
I have used it several times. It's way better than beating off.
Tuvok meets with Namira. He's like, "What is it going on with this second attack? Like, two attacks in 2 days? Like, what's the deal?" And Namira is very perplexed about this. She's like, "Yeah, she's an old lady. She just suddenly had this, like, overwhelming urge to attack the victim and..." You know, like, it doesn't make any sense because Frayn and B'Elanna are nowhere near what happened.
Yeah.
Like, couldn't possibly have been the source of the violent thought. And, like, at this point, I think, like, let B'Elanna out of jail, right? Don't even continue to threaten to scramble her brains.
Right. I mean, if we can be sure that it's not solely her thought's responsibility for this, yeah. That's what I thought, too. But no one mentions that.
Yeah. It doesn't come up.
BLT needs a better legal defense team, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Where is the captain right now? What is she working on?
Yeah.
Did she find that one little flaw in Namira's reasoning and then quit?
They decide to focus their investigation on the old lady and where she's been the last few days.
Yeah.
Where do you think she's been, Ben? Just the market, the park, and the pharmacy.
Played a little canasta.
Yeah.
Tuvok goes and suggests a mind meld to BLT. And she's like, "I don't know about that." And he's like, no, it's like a really light one. Like, not going to be a really heavy mind meld.
That's what I was going to say. As soon as that second hand comes in, she's like, "Whoa, I thought we were just going to make out. You're this is mind anal?
This is like second date stuff at the earliest."
Do you think she could have used a prison uniform for all of the subsequent scenes after her being taken into custody? I think that would have really helped me feel like she was in greater danger or something. Yeah. Like, I thought she should look different or look like the experience had been worse for her than just like having to sit on a bench waiting, which is what it looks like she's been doing.
it's kind of a problem with the script, right? Because, like, it seems like she would just be free to go in this society that doesn't even understand the concept of locking someone up.
Right.
So is she just, like, hanging around this mind mutilation facility for fun?
I don't know.
Could she walk out at any time?
It's hard to tell. We don't know. We're meant to connect those dots.
Yeah. But in the double-handed mind meld, she comes back to Gwil, the guy that she was buying stuff from with the captain, and he put his hands on her shoulders, and she was creeped out by him. She didn't like his energy, his vibe, his wet Caesar.
Oh, it smells good. I know, all the garlic and the lemon and everything.
She remembers that creepy feeling. She also remembers something else, like something so terrible that she physically breaks the meld with Tuvok.
Yeah. She did not like that dude. And so his next stop is to find out what that something terrible might have been. And so he catches up with Gwil at night on the surface of the planet and starts questioning him. And it's pretty clear that Gwil is very curious about the kind of mental gift shrunk that Tuvok keeps all his violent thoughts bottled up in.
It was also clear to me in this scene that Mr. Gwil has resting Anthony Kiedis face. Did you get this?
It does sort of look like a person that was made to suck his kiss.
Yeah, I kind of want to see him with a shirt off running at the camera in slow motion.
Mm-hmm. I did want to see him naked but with a tube sock over his dong.
There's a weird energy to him that I feel like is just a great and interesting performance and interesting direction for him.
Yeah.
Like, he seems to run the gamut of, like, just normal guy walking home from work and a guy with a very intense stare that wants to know all of your darkest thoughts.
And, like, stands just a little bit too close to you and stuff.
Yeah, and the conversation ends as awkwardly as it was. Like, it gets more and more awkward until he turns and leaves and Tuvok follows him.
Yeah.
And it doesn't look like he's headed to dinner with his family like he said he was.
No, it's nothing nearly as wholesome as that. He's doing shady back alley deals.
Yeah, this other guy is exchanging currency for something we're not aware of at this point, and Tuvok's watching the whole thing from the shadows until he's spotted.
Yeah, and they're like, why are you following us? And Tuvok is like, well, I actually think I might have a deal for you.
Yeah.
You see, I'm like you. I put my violent thoughts on one lobe at a time.
This is a strange interaction because Mr. Gwil turns his possible arrest into a bribery situation.
Yeah.
He's like, couldn't help but notice how you squished those violent thoughts. I have a bunch myself. You want to maybe get together sometime and trade these thoughts?
Yeah.
Because the way that he talks about them suggests that he totally gets off on them.
Yeah, he's essentially the webmaster of rotten.com, and Tuvok is offering him some photos of somebody whose head got hit by a helicopter blade.
God, I haven't thought about that site in 20 years.
This episode made me think about it for the first time in 20 years.
God, there's this montage of thoughts where Mr. Gwin shows Tuvok his, and now it's time for Tuvok to give back, and it has that energy of Dirk jacking off in front of that guy in the pickup truck in the third act of Boogie Nights.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing.
Because Tuvok is not ready to whip those thoughts out.
Now, show me.
I'll need a few moments to recover.
I'm surprised you're so easily tired. Your telepathic abilities are strong.
Tuvok blames it on stamina. He's like, I have not done the mental kegels in a long time. I am very spent.
Yeah, Gwil wants to go deeper, you know? He wants to see the really good stuff. Yeah. And Tuvok is kind of asking about it. He's like, so where do you get your merchandise? And he's like, you know, I get it from a lot of places. Some people give it to me. Some people trade it with me. Sometimes I take what I need.
Yikes.
And Tuvok sort of has him on the hook now, and he's like, because this violent thought of B'Elanna's is, quote, still in circulation.
How about Tuvok here, like, putting himself in danger, like, experiencing the dark thoughts that he's suppressed for so long, and doing good investigative work in the process? This is all working.
I love this whole sequence, because it, like, opens up the like, dark underbelly of Mari society, like, in the way that you would actually find out about it, you know?
Yeah.
It's show, not tell. And he's like, yeah, so like you and Frayn both must have gotten a hold of that violent thought, because Frayn's had it like expunged from his mind already, but it's still out there. So somebody's doing it.
The creepiness with which Tuvok shows interest in BLT's thought is like a great performance piece, I thought.
Yeah, yeah.
I have known her for a long time, and she's never let me get that thought. Ugh, it just makes my skin crawl.
Yeah.
Our course is locked in.
Do it. Listen to me very carefully, because I'm only going to say this once.
Do it.
He picks a bad moment to arrest Gwil, because he's like, you're coming with me. And Gwil's like, yeah, but I have two tough buddies here with me.
Yeah.
And so they start kicking Tuvok's ass.
Can't forget about the tough buds.
Yeah. Seems like the Mari are pretty strong, you know, if three of them can take on a pure-blooded Vulcan.
I thought the same thing. I was surprised none of them got put into a jerk cable and thrown across a room.
Or neck pinched. Like, he doesn't get any of them.
Maybe he was weakened from the violent thought hand jobs that he was getting and giving.
Yeah, maybe so.
A lot of tug jobs this episode.
Yeah. So Tuvok is missing, and up on the ship they are trying to find him, trying to scan for him. He's had his communicator taken away, so no luck. And now they need Namira's help, you know.
Right, but how helpful can she be? She's like, I don't know where he is. I can't find him.
Yeah.
As far as I know, it's just me and a couple of assistants operating a weird chair. Like, that's the entire department.
Yeah. I mean, she does say at the beginning of the episode that their constabulary is, like, basically obsolete and doesn't need to have that many people anymore.
It turns out the limits of their telepathy is just stealing violent thoughts, and, like, none of it can be used to find a missing person. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, great. Janeway is like, well, while we're worried about this, like, why don't we send some people down to the service to, like, look around? And also, could you, like, maybe not do the lobotomy on my crew member during? And she's like, no. Like, even though evidence proved that BLT wasn't the only source of this thought in the world, we're going to go ahead with the lobotomy. And also, you can't send anybody down here to try and rescue Tuvok.
That's ridiculous.
Tom.
Am I making any sense here?
Paris does a lot of piping up here during the FaceTime conversation. Like, he talks more than I feel like Janeway and Chakotay do.
Yeah.
For their part, they just kind of look around at each other in silence.
She has to kind of glare him down a couple of times, like,
yeah,
ixnay on the iping up pay during the ace time fay.
Yeah. We cut directly to BLT being dragged to the purging.
Yeah.
And she is not going voluntarily.
Try to relax.
You have got to be kidding.
Sedate her.
Some real, like, welcome, Mr. Bond. Shit. They put her in this chair. There's a light up dildo pointed at the top of her head. They're going to start fucking with her brain.
She is a character who has often been medically experimented on in kind of an unfortunate way, huh?
Yeah. Leave BLT alone. Stop doing this to her.
It's the kind of chair you get x-rays in when you're at the dentist.
Yeah.
And that's like worse than the x-ray itself, is like those plastic things they stick into your brain to do the lobotomy. It's so uncomfortable to hold them in.
Like, how do I bite down on this if you're sticking it into my brain?
Yeah.
Elsewhere on the planet, Tuvok is being held by these dudes. And they're like, let's go into his brain and get more stuff. And they start doing their Mari meld on him. And they're getting some violent images, but they're just not that violent. It's like, okay, one guy whose skin is on fire, who cares?
Did you recognize these scenes? Like, they're from Event Horizon.
Are they really?
Yeah. And you know what's fucking crazy about that is, like, I was playing the timeline in my head and I was like, well, Event Horizon came out in 97, I think.
Yeah.
I looked up when the episode dropped. Event Horizon was in theaters.
Wow.
When this episode came out, which means that they had a Paramount to Paramount film swap situation where they're like, hey, can I get some footage from your movie? And they totally spliced it in. What is that called? Is that telecine?
I think so.
Yeah. So if you guys could just give me the most awful parts of Event Horizon for use on our syndicated television show.
The most awful that aren't going to get us in trouble with the FCC, right?
Right. And so someone had to make that decision, right?
Yeah. That must have been a weird standards and practices meeting.
Yeah.
I also noticed that there was one clip of the Nemesis from Chakotay's visit to Planet War.
Yeah.
That was in there.
That was like the tamest image.
Yeah. So Gwil is like, come on, dude. This is weak tea. Give me the good shit. And Tuvok's like, all right, hold still. And he's like, I'm going to meld you. And it's not going to be a light meld. And then he does one hand.
I don't understand the continuity of the meld anymore. I thought I understood it.
This episode has completely upended everything I previously thought I knew.
Yeah. Maybe Lefty is more dominant. He's got a dominant meld hand.
Oh. Was the right there to, like, moderate the left a little bit when he did it to BLT?
I don't know. Now I just kind of want to watch all the melds to see if I can pick up any tips.
So this meld is not the bloody nose type of meld, but it is the choky, I can't breathe kind of meld. Because in the fantasy of the meld, Tuvok is choking Gwil out. And the Gwil in the real world is like losing his breath and suffering for it.
I think it is so intentional how we don't see the reverse shot where the two henchmen are sitting next to Tuvok. Because if we did, we'd be seeing two dudes just straight jacking it.
Yeah.
Because this is the hardest of hardcore, right?
Mm-hmm. They'd be doing a self-tug in this moment.
Yeah.
I mean, we never see them again.
No. You
know? Like, later, Tuvok just has Gwil in custody and takes him up to the ship and puts him in the brig.
Yeah, I mean, maybe those other guys should also be brought to justice.
Seems like they were a big part of it.
Uh-huh. Like, maybe get the entire ring.
Yeah. This is when the captain radios Namira one more time and is like, you've got to shut down the thing with BLT. We've, like, completely figured this thing out, and Gwil is up on the ship, and we can present all of the evidence you're going to need to exonerate B'Elanna. And they do. They have a McLaughlin group.
Issue one.
A woman with a very similar haircut to B'Elanna lets Namira into the conference room. And it only bumped me for a split second, but she's so far back in frame. I was like, why is B'Elanna like showing her in?
Yeah. Yeah, that was strange. Strange casting.
So she comes in and Tuvok does the kind of like Sherlock Holmes. Here's what really went down. Frayn and Gwil were working together. They knew that B'Elanna had some crazy shit going on under that loaf. They wanted to get access to it. So they set up a thing where Frayn would knock into her, and they both got the violent thought. Gwil put it out on the market. He sold it to that old lady.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out you've got a black market for bad thoughts going on your planet.
Yeah, and this was like a case of violent thought abusers getting used to like the weak stepped on thoughts and then stepping up to a BLT violent thought, which is like pure and uncut. And it just totally blew them up.
Namira is such a pearl clutcher receiving this news.
Yeah, Namira's like, why would anyone do this? And Tuvok's like, it's because they like to jack off to this. And Namira's like, why?
And why do they jack off?
And Tuvok is like, because it's fun to do bad things.
For example, smoke on cigarettes.
He's like, if you don't believe me, you can interview Mr. Gwil in the brig.
Oh.
You know that place you thought was super dumb?
Oh, we got the brig up to 1%, baby.
Yeah. You know we got a place for this.
So she's going to go see to that. And you know, the doctor gives Lieutenant Torres a clean bill of health. He's like, yeah, they only got a couple of your violent thoughts. And she's like, well, it's an abundant supply, buddy.
Yeah. Did you hear what they had to do to Kern to get his violent thoughts out? That guy's on Kronos just smashing clay pots. He's actually a danger to many people.
The captain's log refuses to speculate on whether there will be any, you know, reforms to the Mari justice system.
Yeah.
Reforms to the justice. That'll be the day.
So the button on the episode that we get here is Seven just barging into Janeway's quarters. And I hope this is a thing. Like, I hope Seven never rings the doorbell. I hope she never asks to enter a place. I hope she just walks in and out of places, because this is fun. She goes right into Janeway's, and
she's really the Steve Urkel of Star Trek Voyager.
Like, Janeway doesn't get the self-own of Strange New Worlding that Seven is trying to attack her with.
Yeah.
And Janeway makes the case that, like, look, this is Star Trek, baby.
Yeah. The risks that we take by following the Prime Directive and seeking out new life and new civilizations, this shit is fun for us, baby!
Yeah, that's what we're into. We like simple pleasures, like exploring strange new worlds and edging with other species' legal systems.
That's just me. That's just something that I enjoy. Call me crazy, call me a pervert.
This is probably the best tug job the ship has gotten in a long time.
Did you like this episode, Ben?
You know, I'm really easy to get along with most of the time. But I don't like bullies, I don't like threats, and I don't like you.
I mean, this episode is very silly. I think it's got a lot of big holes. For example, if the Mari don't imprison people, what is B'Elanna doing the entire time?
Yep.
And generally speaking, like, a lot of that stuff, like, I think it would bother me in an episode that wasn't as fun in other ways.
Right.
Like, Tuvok going into the Mari underworld, that whole sequence was so well done and so fun. Mm-hmm. And, like, despite the, like, incredibly flimsy to non-existent framework it is built on, the brutal irony of Gwil being put in jail at the end, is also really fun.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, I think it's kind of like a B-minus mediocre episode, but I had a fun time watching it.
What you said there just made me think of the possible hypocrisy of Namira keeping BLT in a place that we can't see, knowing her feelings on Briggs. Like,
yeah,
what exactly is happening there?
Where is she in a 5-star hotel?
Yeah.
You know, she's sipping on jippers on a beach somewhere.
This is one of those classic Star Trek is turning an alien's way of being into a warning for us all episodes, like in a way that a lot of science fiction tends toward.
Yeah.
And in that way, it was a totally fine episode. But the parts of it that bumped me out of it were how Starfleet just gets fucking cucked by their own Prime Directive here repeatedly. Yeah. And I just think there's a version of this episode that might be more interesting if that is more of an argument instead of a, well, that's just the letter of the law, man. And if it means BLT gets lobotomized, like, that's what we all signed up for.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just don't think that's right. Especially when we know how flexible the Prime Directive is in certain circumstances.
Yeah. Well, do you want to see if there's any priority one messages in the inbox, Adam?
I think I'm just flexible enough to reach them.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Our first P1 is from Garrett, and it's to Captain Mike. It goes like this. Thanks for the P1 shout-out at the Atlanta show, buddy. Lane and I were at first confused, then delighted at that awesome surprise. Sadly, your P1 did not hit as hard in the room as the cosplaying Spock/Twain dude who had the first P1, but yours was our favorite. Here's hoping we've hung out with you and Sarah by the time this drops. Cheers!
Oh, geez. Captain Mike shouldn't feel bad at all. The Spock Mark Twain guy stalked us for many shows on the tour.
He was at a bunch of them.
Yeah.
We smoked cigars of his in Austin. I think he was at DC and Atlanta.
Yeah. Yeah, he was at a bunch of shows. Big supporter.
Yeah.
Just as Garrett was here. Look at us. We're... The Spock Twain guy is stepping on Captain Mike and Garrett again.
God damn it, Spock Twain guy.
I'm excited to go back to Atlanta.
Yeah. Good place to visit.
We will return.
Indeed.
Ben, our next Priority One message is from Chris, and it is to Andrew. That message goes like this. Andrew, my twin separated by 4 years. Happy 40th. You're the best brother and a great dad. And husband, too. You introduced me to Greatest Gen, revolutionizing our twin speak.
Whoa.
Now nobody else can understand us. And I wouldn't have it any other way. Happy birthday, brother. I love you. B&A, roll that Red October drop.
One ping only, please.
Or the Rolaren drop. Or both.
One ping only, please.
Chris and Andrew, if their twin speak is Greatest Gen speak... I think you're going to be talking a lot like me and Ben.
Yeah.
That's the language that we're fluent in.
That's very special, though, that kind of, like, inside language that two really close people like twins speak with each other. I feel honored to have worked our way into that for someone.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Very cool.
Well, if you would like to get a P1 on the show for an upcoming episode... We would love to have you. It's MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron to set it up.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda.
I did. I think I'm going to give it to Namira, both for being the kind of cop that is so convinced of her abilities that she has completely missed a huge criminal syndicate that is operating right under her nose. But also just for being Bator. So fun to see her out from under the loaf and doing a very different kind of role. And
she's covering up other things and revealing something different.
Yeah,
and
I loved
as
it.
This character, huh?
Yeah. So Namira is my drunk Shimoda for those two reasons.
Mine is going to be BLT for a specific moment when Namira explains how thought crimes work. On her planet, BLT does this wobble of incredulity. Like, she she physically is like, oh, are you fucking serious? In a way that I just really responded to. Like,
yeah.
I feel like that a lot.
Very fun.
So, good bit of acting there.
Objection noted. We'll do this without you.
Do it.
Well, Adam... I got to head over to gach.biz/game and fire up the game of buttholes. Will of the Caretaker. Currently, our runabout is on square 13. And before I get into my role, let me tell you about our next episode of Voyager. It's season 4, episode 11, concerning flight. When pirates steal some of Voyager's technology, Janeway and Tuvok discover her holographic Leonardo da Vinci... who helps them in their search. How do they discover her Leonardo da Vinci?
Uh-oh. You got to keep your holotax documents password protected, I think.
Do some of his clockwork jack-off machines just pleasure the pirates into submission?
God, we're going from an episode about tug jobs to a Leonardo da Vinci episode?
It's Sato!
This is a golden age for us, Adam.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
All right. We've got a Quark's bar out ahead that we could hit. Mm-hmm. We're going to have some modifications to the game board soon, if I'm not mistaken. But as of this episode, it's...
You're talking about the addition of a certain zone square?
Yeah. Yeah, it's looking like there may be a zone added. But anyways, we're on square 13, like I said, and I'm going to go ahead and roll this bow. Wow, I rolled a 4.
Chula!
Did I win?
Hardly.
Putting us on the doorstep of that Quark's bar, but not quite on it.
Boy, that is just set and spike for me with how often I roll ones.
It is. But Square 17 is a regular old episode for next week. Looking forward to it.
Me too, Ben. Just as I'm looking forward to thanking everyone who made this episode possible.
Yeah.
Beginning first and foremost with the Friends of DeSoto who support the show financially. It's the whole reason this entire operation can function. You can join the Miriam Friends of DeSoto who do that over at MaximumFun.org/join.
They helped us have the finances to hire Wendy Pretty, an amazing producer who produces and edits on our shows and keeps us in line and organized in a way that I never thought possible.
Yeah.
Got to thank Bill Tilly, the card daddy, who runs at Greatest Trek social media accounts on Instagram and Twitter. Follow those accounts. They're really fun. We're putting up audiograms. If you see an audiogram you think is funny, retweet it or share it or whatever. I don't know. What do people do on Instagram? They just like things, right?
Oh, yeah. They're liking and regramming or they're doing stories or whatever. Yeah, all that's over there at Greatest Trek.
Like and comment and smash that follow button, baby.
The music you're hearing is by Dark Materia. The theme music and interstitial music for all Greatest Gen shows was made by Adam Ragusea.
True.
Great friend to the internet.
And with that, we'll be back at you next week with another great episode of Star Trek Voyager and an episode of The Greatest Generation Voyager that's going to have the Friends of DeSoto urging Ben and Adam to put a clockwork jack-off square on the game of buttholes.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.